Welcome to Theater Inn in downtown Wilmington, Delaware. This is Studio 2 on the Road. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. John Carney knows Delaware. He was lieutenant governor in the early 2000s, then represented the state in Congress. Until recently, he served as governor for 8 years, and he's now starting a new chapter as mayor of Wilmington.
So what has he learned in decades of public service at the city, state, and federal level? What does he make of the major threats facing Delaware, and what is his vision to revitalize Wilmington?
Joining us live this evening to discuss all of that and more is none other than John Carney.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you all for coming out.
So Mayor Carney, we wanted to start this conversation. We wanted to go wide. Dexit. Delaware is the legal home to 2.2 million registered entities. The state collects over $2 billion annually from fees from those businesses, a chunk of the state budget. And according to Reuters, $5 billion companies left Delaware last year. 9 more are going to make a vote in the coming weeks on whether to leave the state. And so I wanted to ask you, do you think Dexit is real or are the fears overblown?
Delaware being and Wilmington being the corporate capital of the world is a really big deal. More than $2 billion of the state budget comes from corporate franchise fees. So it's about 35 to 40% of our budget. So if we didn't have corporate franchise fees here in Delaware, we'd have an 8% sales tax. We do not have a sales tax. And so you're talking about taxes that are exported to most of these companies. They may or may not do business here. They're domiciled here to get access, really, to the Chancery Court. And that's where the controversy has come from. Two very profile cases didn't go the way that Elon Musk in one case and another fellow in another case. Arguably that I'm not a lawyer, but if you knew the facts of each of those cases, the vice chancellor, the chancellor in one case, who I appointed, made the right decision. They didn't get the decision they wanted, and so they're bringing all this negativity in on the state.
So what should Delaware do?
So let me go back to the end of the question. Is it having an impact? Well, the revenues are still up and holding. That'll be the real test. You hear a lot about from people with big mouths who say that, you know, everybody's going to leave. Everybody's not leaving. Mm-hmm. Are we worried about it? Absolutely. But the judges are there and appointed to rule on the cases as they see them. In these particular cases, they ruled against people, and you can make your judgment about those folks and where they're coming from. So I know how good our Chancery Court is. I know how good corporate law is in the state of Delaware, and I also know how important it is to our state.
So if that is indeed...
Oh, by the way, it's really important to the city of Wilmington as well.
Yes.
Because the city of Wilmington benefits from the corporate bar that's located here. They pay 1.25% wage tax. We benefit because we actually get filing fees, which were created probably a dozen years ago to provide financial assistance to the city of Wilmington. So, and when I was governor, we increased those fees. We doubled those fees. And so now it doesn't sound like a lot, but for the city of Wilmington, it is $12 million in fees each year. Mm-hmm. So there's real impact if something negative happens in that. In those courts.
So I guess the question is, how aggressive should the state be in trying to prevent some theoretical negative thing from happening, some sort of large exile? Because your perspective, which I think is shared by many, is that the courts functioned as they were intended to function in these cases. So you could tell the courts, you could pass laws, or you could lean on the courts in some other way and tell them, basically, lay off these big corporations.
You got to be very, very careful for just the reasons that you're saying. We are the corporate capital. We have that center of excellence for just the reasons. You go in a court. First of all, a company can take their case to the court. They can get it expeditiously reviewed, and they can get a decision made by an expert corporate-trained lawyer. calling the balls and strikes as she sees them. There are more female vice chancellors than males today, and I appointed several of them. So we don't want to, that's part of our reputation.
Right.
Calling it according to the law. Yeah. We do have flexibility in the law that enables companies to make decisions, or their boards to make decisions based on the particular needs of the company. But, you know, it comes down to advocates on one side who are advocates for shareholders, and then advocates on the other side that are behind the board side of things, or the management.
The big executives. Yeah.
So we have, as I said, expert judges that call the cases as they see them according to the law.
So if you end up...
And that's important to companies deciding, that's why I want to be in Delaware. I don't want to be in Texas and have some, you know,
non-characterized.
You know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. What are you saying? So you're saying that they could go to some place where they treat Elon Musk well, but then another business says, I don't want to be in that same state because they're not going to treat me as well because my name's not Elon Musk.
They're not calling the cases on the basis of the facts of the case and the law and the merits. Thank you.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you about...
But make no mistake.
Yeah.
It's a big deal
for
Delaware. I mean, we're a small state, $6 billion total budget, $200 million city budget. So the numbers that we talked about matter. And more as important as that is, we have some of the top lawyers in the country graduating from, you know, Harvard, Stanford, all the big law schools who come to our community. They bring their expertise. The same thing the DuPont company used to be when they brought so many engineers with their PhDs from universities all across the country. They moved into our community and lifted the community up. All the organizations they participated in, their children in the schools that they went to. So you got to think about, I thought a lot about that, frankly, during the pandemic, reading the obituaries, all these people that had come to Delaware with their expertise and their advanced degrees and lifting us up.
Zooming out a little bit, but staying somewhat on this conversation, Delaware is an interesting place. It's a blue state in a moment where I think a lot of national Democrats want to redefine the party as opposing corporate power, billionaire power. And yet the state of Delaware, a Democrat state, has a long history as a pro-business, business-friendly state. And that's not just on the incorporation. There's also been a history of giving tax incentives to companies to relocate here. There was a case recently with Merck, right? So how does the Delaware Democratic Party fit into the national party right now? Do you think there's tension there?
Well, there's always tension. There's always tension in the Democratic Party because we have a big tent. Mm-hmm. And that tent has gotten wider. It's gotten younger voices coming up with different perspectives. For me, I learned that, and I still hold this to be true, that the most important thing for elected officials is to make sure that you have jobs for the people that you represent. Mm-hmm. Because without a job, without jobs, and without a growing economy, everything you get to do is much harder. If we're not growing as a city, we'll be in significant decline. Will be some of the cities that you see in this region that aren't doing so well.
Yeah.
So being pro-business for us, I say, I'm a pro-jobs, pro-business Democrat. And that means striking that balance where you're encouraging. Look, I would say tomorrow, we shouldn't be doing any more incentives if everybody else agreed.
The other cities.
And states. As long as we're competing, and we compete every single day. And by the way, the incentives that we provide are based on a return on that investment. Mm-hmm. How many jobs, how much state income tax are we going to get? How much other taxes and fees are we going to get? And so we get paid back if they don't create the number of jobs. So the biggest thing happened in the city is Insight deciding to expand and move here onto Rodney Square. 300 jobs coming down the pike from Pennsylvania. They already have almost 500 over on just outside of the city. But that's going to be a big boost for our revenues, and we need to keep growing our revenues in order to to grow and to get better, so that all the neighborhoods can be stronger, so our parks can be in better shape, so our infrastructure can be strong. You need the revenue. And I think one of the things that sometimes our party forgets is that this is the way the world works. You've got to have revenue to provide great education for your children.
I actually want to read a quote back to you that you gave to Spotlight Delaware, quote, "I think the critics of that," talking about corporate incentives, "need to get a dose of the real world about how these corporate decisions are made." So it sounds like you're calling some wings of the Democratic Party a bit naive.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think they need to be more realistic about how it works. Most of them on the legislative branch, they don't have the interactions with businesses that are making those decisions. I have, both as a member of then Governor Carper's cabinet as Secretary of Finance, and I've counted the tax receipts as they've come in and seen what it enables us to do, the investments that we can make in farmland preservation, in open space preservation, in education, in higher education, support for those who are down on their luck. All those kinds of things take revenue to do that, and that revenue is generated by economic growth and development.
Yeah, I want to ask you, you've been in so many positions serving the state of
Delaware. Keep a job, I guess, right?
And I think about the perspective that you must have, right? You served in Congress. You were lieutenant governor. You worked for other governors. You were the governor, and now you're... And now you're mayor of the city of Wilmington. I want to ask you, what did you think you could do as mayor that you couldn't do in all the other positions of service?
I just wanted to continue to serve and make a difference in our community. It might sound kind of trite, but it's real. I love this position because I can see the things that we're doing every day. I can feel the things that we're doing every day. We go all over the city, and we see these places that needs to be fixed. I call in potholes that we run across in streets that are all torn up, and call our public works to people, I mustn't be driving them crazy. But you know, you're actually doing something and having a real impact, and so I feel like, you know, my parents were both school teachers. My mother just passed away in January, and they raised nine of us, and we didn't have a lot, but we, you know, they made it clear that the best thing that you can do in life is to serve other people, like they were doing, right? Yeah. By example, mostly, right? And so that's what this is for me.
But, you know, sitting governors who then decide to run for mayor, pretty unusual. And there are some people who are a little skeptical. So here's one of the comments that our producer, Andreas Copes, gathered in their recent trip to Wilmington. I want you to take a listen.
It concerns me that our governor became our mayor, and what was going on behind the scenes for that decision to be made. I'm questioning that, like, as opposed to the Democratic Party boosting someone else up.
And I want you to respond to that skepticism, because there's been that within the Democratic Party. Some folks feel like, you know, there hasn't been sort of the handing of the baton to the next generation. I want you to respond to them when you hear folks say, like, things like that. And that's one of your Wilmington residents.
Yeah, well, I just answered it a minute ago why I did it. And so I would just say that's my answer to the question. You know, we have elections. 56% of people decided to vote for me because basically I told them I was going to do what I just told you. Mm-hmm. Should we continue to build the bench and pass the baton? We have a brand new United States senator who follows on a senator who was there for 25 years. That's pretty half passing of the baton. I passed the baton to the county executive, supported my lieutenant governor, who was kind of the next person up. So, you know, people can complain, and, you know, they can vote for the other people is the way I look at it. Here's why I do it. If you want to vote for me, vote for me. If not, you know, we have other good people, too.
I wanted to ask you about marijuana.
My favorite.
We're talking about new revenue, right? And a lot of states have seen this as a potential for new revenue, which is why they let it roll out. But you vetoed legislation once, and then you let it pass without your signature. And now, as mayor, you're working with city council to create zones where marijuana businesses...
They passed it. They approved it.
Yeah, they approved it.
Yeah.
Where they can operate. I want to sort of... How does your rationale towards cannabis, how is it now as it has evolved over the years, now that marijuana is legal here in your state and city?
Like, smoking pot is not the worst thing. I'm not going to admit anything here on stage, but, you know. I was in college during the 70s, you know.
You didn't inhale, though, right?
Right. That's right. But, look, in my walk around the other day, we're over on the west side on the lower hilltop, and with the councilwoman in that district. And the first place she took us was a liquor store on the corner of Chestnut and whatever it was. And she went on and on about what that liquor store does and draws and what a nuisance, worse than a nuisance, it is for that community. So the owner at some point came out and we were talking. And she said, I didn't know I was going to get in all of this. And, you know, I might be willing to sell the store. Well, I called the previous mayor. They bought 6 liquor stores in the last administration to help neighborhoods get out of that mess, right? So my objection to marijuana was mostly that, you know, we're going to create another liquor store problem in the city. It doesn't make sense. Now, all the people are pro. They, oh, don't worry about it. They're not like that. Okay, well, we'll find out, I guess.
Yeah.
And secondly, I just didn't think it was great for the to promote. You could make the same argument with alcohol for our young people. Mm-hmm. And so, but is it the worst thing? We stopped arresting people for it, you know, several years ago. We will violate you if you're on probation, if you have if you're dirty. I don't know what they're going to do now, but so, yeah. So we came up with an idea. Look, you know, sometimes you got to realize when the gig is up and you've got to do, you know, work with the council. And some council members didn't want it anywhere. Mm-hmm. There wasn't enough votes for that. So we looked at a compromise, looked at where schools are, where neighborhoods try to keep it away from schools and neighborhoods. Again, what we didn't do or what somebody didn't do with liquor stores. And so we want to have good, strong, beautiful communities, right? And we don't want to create things. I don't want to create things that pull neighborhoods down. We have that right now in several areas in our city.
And so now there are zones where these shops
Correct.
Can be.
Yes.
And they're away from residential areas.
Correct.
Yeah. And so that kind of balances the need. I want to talk about what benefits does a city like Wilmington get from having these shops here? And I know that, you know, the big draw for marijuana, recreational marijuana, has always been this tax revenue that folks say are going to come in. And I want to
Yeah, we don't talk about that. So there's no benefit there for us. People say, well, would you take revenue? Sure. But they're not going to give it to us. Otherwise, they would have put it in the bill in the first place. And I have mixed feelings about that. Same with respect to we tax cigarettes. Do we want to rely on, you know, revenue we get from cigarette smoking? And same thing with liquor. So-called sin taxes. I mean, it's a big question. The reality is people are going to smoke, people are going to drink. So if you have tax on people smoking, chances are maybe they won't pay the extra money. It's really expensive to buy a pack of cigarettes now. But I want healthy communities, and I want to do whatever it takes to make sure our communities are as healthy as they can be.
When you look across the country at cities of a similar size, maybe also in the orbit of large metropolises like Philadelphia or a Chicago or a Boston, is there an area where you feel like Wilmington's got an edge in attracting a new resident or a new business? And do you think there are areas where Wilmington has like a structural deficit?
Yeah, I think we have lots of edges. Like, we're in the middle of it all, right?
Sure.
We're in the middle between Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia.
That proximity edge.
New York City. I'm sorry?
A proximity edge. You're close to a lot of stuff.
We're right in the middle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're in the middle of a growing bioscience business sector in the greater Philadelphia area. And we are Insight, Merck, you mentioned. We're benefiting from that in terms of job developments. We're here on the river, and so we're connected to the competition on the river for port business, and we're making really investments there. And we're connected on the southern part of our state with agricultural issues and that type of thing. We're low cost of living in this area, yeah. Particularly when you talk about, we've got great transportation. We've got great entertainment here in the city for a small city.
With all of that said, right, one thing that's interesting when you just look from the 30,000-foot view of Wilmington is the population has been right around 70,000 since about 1980. It's not a place that seems to be growing. It's not sort of in steep decline as some other satellite cities are. Why is that the case, and do you want to change that?
Yeah, well, first of all, you heard me say earlier on, if we're not growing, we're dying, right? Yeah. And so we have to grow. We are growing, actually, residentially in the city. We've had 2,000 new units over the last through the last administration, and we're up to about 73,000. We were stagnant at about 70,000 for a long time, but at one time, Wilmington was 100,000
sure.
people. In fact, we have a water and wastewater system built for 100,000. Lots of reasons for that, but in the meantime, we've had expansion into the suburban areas, right? Well, more than half of the people that work in Wilmington live in the suburbs. They pay Wilmington taxes. They come to the theater here in Wilmington. They enjoy the Blue Rocks and the Blue Coats and all the things that we have to offer. A lot of the people that live in the city work in the suburbs. So we're a larger, 550,000 or thereabouts community kind of on the edge of greater Philadelphia. We can, as I said earlier to somebody, we can get to the airport faster than people in Northeast Philly from here, as long as the traffic's not bad. So we've got a lot, going for us, and we're in with this region with all these universities. Really, the competition today is who's going to get businesses to pick their area, who's got the best workforce.
And that was former Delaware governor and now Wilmington mayor John Carney. We're listening back to our interview taped before a live audience last week at Theater Inn in downtown Wilmington. Tell us the biggest issues you see facing Wilmington and Delaware and how to solve them. You can email studio2@whyy.org or drop your comments in the YouTube chat. And it is DJ of the day. Send us the name of any song with a Delaware connection, and we will play the winner at the end of the show. You'll also be entered to win two tickets to a June 6th concert under the Star Show in King of Prussia. It features the Tom Petty and Bruce Springsteen tribute band, Born to Run Down the Dream. We'll be right back with more from our live event, including Mayor Carney's take on the friendly Delaware way of politics. And if it can survive our polarized times, I'll see you on the other side of this break.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you were going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money Podcast from NPR.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg, and we're listening to our interview with Wilmington Mayor John Carney, which Avi and I taped last week before a live audience at Theater Inn in downtown Wilmington, Delaware. We talked about his decades of public service and vision for the future. We also want to hear from you. Tell us the biggest issues you see facing the state and how you would solve them. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to drop a comment in the live chat. Before we dive back into the interview, take a listen to some folks we heard from on the streets of Wilmington. There was one major theme. Take a listen.
I mean, the drug rise in the city is crazy, and the rise of fentanyl, that's what's crazy.
We need places for the homeless, more shelters, more services, because there's a lot of homeless people out here at night. They're sleeping. They don't have nowhere to go. They're all up and down Market Street.
There's a lot of abandoned houses around here. Turn these things into shelters or whatever. Get people to run them. Sounds easier than it is, but that's the kind of ideas I would have.
With those voices in mind, I gave my next question to the mayor.
When we think about other parts of your vision for Wilmington, you said growth. How do you see revitalization fitting into that?
One of the biggest challenges that we have in the city, maybe the biggest, is reinvesting in our housing stock and eliminating vacant housing. In some of our neighborhoods, and we've been around to all of them, there are lots of vacant homes. The vacant homes, if you have a vacant home on your block, chances are you've got issues with people who are unhoused or using that and squatting. They create a risk, particularly in the wintertime, with fires that they set inside the houses. So it tears down the whole block. When we take that, we have a group called the Land Bank that acquires these properties, turns them over to these small contractors, some of whom hire the guys from Howard Tech to do some of the work and learn about the work. Then that property is required to be sold at a below market rate to an affordable buyer. So we take a loss, we meaning the taxpayer, on that transaction, but we get so many benefits out of it, right? You get a homeowner, you've fixed that block, you've helped that young person with the skills, you've helped a minority contractor with that kind of work. It's like win, 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 win. The challenge is you have to keep the pipeline of resources flowing. When I was governor, I was able to do that. We had, because of the revenues that we've talked about right from the start, we've had additional revenue, and this is one of the things that we did with it. We provided $5 million in the budget that I left to the Wilmington Land Bank to do the work that I'm just talking about.
Now you face the prospect of, well, we'll see, but budget cuts, there's the possibility of a recession looming. From a financial perspective...
Not a great time to be governor.
Yeah. But what about mayor, right? I mean...
It's harder to be mayor.
Yeah, so you were governor, for instance, during, COVID, right?
Go.
That's...
Don't remind me.
Yeah, that's one of the most, calamitous things that can happen societally and within, a government. How do you compare that challenge to what may be coming now? And what are you most worried about from a financial management perspective looking at the city's budget?
So that program that I just mentioned requires funding from the state for the land bank. The program was created by my predecessor with federal money that the Biden administration made available. And that's going away for sure. In fact, they're clawing back some of that money. So my biggest fear is the lack of sustainability of some programs that have really been impactful, both for the workforce, for local contractors, for our communities, right? That's my biggest concern. So my challenge as mayor is to make sure we're running a tight enough ship so that we have resources, extra resources for that. One of the things that the city was able to do by good fiscal management, by growth on the revenue side, is to develop a pretty sizable fund balance. Now, you don't want to use your fund balance for your regular operations, but you could use, and we're going to use some of the fund balance if it passes in our council tonight, for what I call neighborhood stabilization, neighborhood revitalization, because it's a one-time investment in housing stock mostly. Some of it goes to some of our seniors who have something in the house they need to really have fixed to enable them to stay in the house, stay on that block, so it doesn't become vacant. A lot of those vacants are because some of our senior citizens who pass away and their children or whoever they leave behind aren't able to keep up the house and it falls into disrepair. So that's my biggest concern, is not having the resources. We can't manufacture resources. We don't have any ability to do that. The only thing that we can do to increase revenue is raise property taxes.
Right.
Can't raise. So we got to grow. And guess what? People don't like the property taxes to go up.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah.
But from what I hear you saying is that the money that you have squirreled away, you're willing to invest it in, and I don't mean this derogatorily at all, some ancillary services and programs, but you don't want to spend that down on core services because that's how you end up in trouble.
Exactly.
Okay.
If you spend that, if you rely on that, for your regular operations, then when that's gone, you're really in a deep hole.
Yep.
Because the challenge is, and it's same with the state, that the cost growth for a government, a city government, goes up higher than your revenues. So at some point they're going to cross, and you're going to need new revenue somewhere else. And that's where, when I was governor, I made sure the city had that additional $6 million. 1% on the property tax is $400 million. $400,000, excuse me. I wish it was $400 million.
Yeah.
So think about
with enough growth, it could be, I suppose.
Yeah. So think about it. $6 million of additional revenue, that's a lot of property tax increase that you're avoiding. So that's the basic foundation on which you have to build your leadership, your service as a mayor, as a government executive. It's got to be built on a sound economic and financial foundation. Otherwise, you get yourself in trouble. Look at some of the cities. California always has problems because they rely heavily on super taxes on capital gains, and capital gains realizations go up and down like this.
Sure.
With the stock market.
With the stock market, right.
So they're getting killed right now, and they got a huge budget deficit. We're steady Eddie.
You've talked already in our conversation about Delaware's reputation as a state where political compromise happens and cooler heads prevail. Do you think that spirit, that so-called Delaware way, is going to endure in this political climate over the next 5-10 years?
Well, I sure hope so.
But do you think it will?
Yeah, I don't know, Avi, and I certainly...
You seem maybe like you think it's not going to.
I guess I'm more pessimistic than optimistic, and let me tell you why, in part. I try not to get into personalities or what have you, or differences of political differences of opinion. When I first started out working for then-governor, after leaving Senator Biden, working for Governor Carper, the Delaware House of Representatives was a Republican majority, significant public majority. They had 5 or 6 Republicans that were elected in Democratic districts. So they swung pretty hard on Democratic issues. The Senate was solidly Democratic, except that a good portion of the leadership were conservative Democrats from the lower part of our state. So old Southern Democrats, right? Well, those differences actually created the balance in terms of what actually got done, because each side had to reach an accommodation with the other side, right? And as I mentioned earlier, you had 16 years of Republican governors, 16 plus years of Democratic governors, and so there was greater balance. Now you've got a Democratic governor, overwhelmingly Democratic legislature, almost veto-proof. And so...
That's what parties are supposed to want, though, right? You're supposed to win elections, amass power, then you get to pass your agenda.
That wasn't your question.
Yeah.
Your question was, do I think that we're going to have the Delaware way
people
work together? I think that what I just described is people had to work together.
Right.
Right. And what's interesting now is people still have to work together, but they're in the same caucus.
Yeah.
And so you have Democrats fighting with Democrats. And
But the spirit of collegiality could still exist, though, even in a state that's like got a supermajority in one party or the other. So do you think at least that attitude or perspective might endure, even if sort of the impetus to work across party lines is not there?
Yes, it will if the individual members act accordingly.
You served in Congress and experienced a bit of Washington during the first Trump administration. There was a little bit of an overlap there. I want you to talk about how you see the federal government right now, how you see it.
Completely dysfunctional. No, I mean, there was an article in the New York Times yesterday. We have a budget, we have a national debt that's the size of our economy. National debt that's the size of our economy. The last time it was like that, it's the end of World War II. That's a big problem. And then we have a party who's kind of ripping down government and all these other things as if they're going to fix that. And then you look at it because of their tax policy, they're just going to make it worse. Doesn't make any sense to me. As I said, I served in the House when we were in the minority, so you don't get much say. I was able to get a few things done working across the aisle and kind of in the Delaware way. There's plenty of members on the Republican side who are willing to do that, but those members are caught almost stranglehold with the leadership on both sides that are playing a game of politics up here when you're trying to get things done for your district down here. So sometimes I have to turn. I'm a loyal listener.
Thank you.
I have to turn it off.
Yeah.
I have to turn it off.
Yeah.
Because I'd rather listen to WDEL's commercials than listen to hear about the latest, you know, thing that the president's doing.
But that's amazing, though. Someone like you.
Mm-hmm. Who's in it.
Who spent a life engaging with politics and service. Even you feel so overwhelmed that you turn it off. That's a new thing for you, I take it.
Yeah, it is. There's a meanness about it. There's hate about it. That's not why I did this.
That was Wilmington Mayor John Carney speaking with Avi and I last week at our Studio 2 on the Road event at Theater Inn in Delaware. We talked about the biggest issues facing his city, what he learned during his decades of public service, and what he hopes to accomplish next. And we still want to hear from you. Tell us the biggest issues you see facing Wilmington and Delaware and how to solve them. You can email us, studio2@whyy.org, or put your comments in the chat on our YouTube live stream. Reminder, the show streams live from Studio 2 right here in Philly on WHYY's YouTube channel. You can see me and Avi, our guests, videos, and so much more. More of Mayor Carney coming up after this break. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg. Most of our show today is from the live event we hosted last week at Theater Inn in downtown Wilmington, Delaware. We spoke with Mayor John Carney about his vision for the future. We'd also love to hear from you. What is the biggest issue facing Delaware and how would you solve it? You can email us, studio2@whyy.org, or drop a comment in our YouTube live stream. Now let's get back to the conversation and hear about Carney's relationship with Joe Biden. He was a staffer for Biden in the 1980s when the former president was in the Senate.
As we get ready to open up the floor to Q&A, we can't end our questions without talking about one of the most famous Delawareans, former President Joe Biden. He was recently diagnosed with a very aggressive form of prostate cancer. Got to ask you, have you spoken to him? Give your reaction. And just also some of the reaction to the national conversation that is happening within the Democratic Party following his decision to step aside last summer.
Yeah, that's when I turn off your radio station when I hear that. I love Joe Biden. He served this state incredibly well. Joe Biden was in it for the right reason, and he did so much for our state. So I'll always know him as Joe. I call him Mr. President, but he'll always be special for me. He was kind of one of the people that was the model for how you serve, right? You know, I know people close to the president, and you know, I don't believe any of this nonsense that I hear.
Do you have a reaction? I mean, there's literally this conversation going on within the Democratic Party. There's reporting arguing about whether there was a cover-up and things like that. I mean, how is it the time to have this conversation within the Democratic Party? How do you feel about that? I mean, especially because this person, this civil servant for this country, for the state that you love so much, is the center of this conversation.
Yeah, well, I think that Democratic Party needs to look in the mirror a little bit too, and figure out why some of the people who should be voting for us voted for the other guy. And it wasn't because of when Joe Biden decided not to continue the campaign. You could make a strong argument that the timing accrued to the benefit of Kamala Harris. But people didn't vote for us, didn't vote for her for different reasons than the timing of when President Biden decided not to continue the campaign. We could do a whole session on that, but we got all, you know, we're here, we're a swing, we're a blue state, Joe Biden's state. But we got all the commercials, all the TV commercials out of Philadelphia. You got them. You know what they
said. It was a lot.
It was a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, just look at what we got. Look at what he's doing. Look at what he does to people. Those were kind of on the, you know, on the commercials. I think the Democratic Party should absolutely be thinking about, you know, what should we be doing to get our people back. Voting for us, people that work hard, go to work every day.
Okay, so I want to make sure we do leave time for Q&A. So it's really hard for us to see. So
can't see anybody except the folks in the front row.
Hi. So I think we're going to have, if you wouldn't mind just saying your name and asking a question. And
yeah, you can raise your hands high so producer Paige can see you if you have interest. And I think there's someone right there.
Okay, fantastic. So your name and also your question. Thank you.
Good evening. Kate Clemis, proud resident of Wilmington, Delaware. Thank you so much to HYY for hosting this important public dialogue. And thank you, Mr. Mayor, for participating. I just wanted to ask you to share a little bit about your vision. You and I were about 10 people strong at an event last week at Warner Elementary, the Wilmington Collaborative, and we were talking about the state of public education in the city of Wilmington. And if you could share a little bit about your vision, I think it's as crucial as housing and economic development, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about what you're hoping to accomplish.
Well, that could take a whole session. But to start off, we're failing the kids in our city, pure and simple. Citywide, at third grade, the majority of the children aren't reading proficiently. So when I was governor, we created what we call opportunity funding to provide additional resources to schools with children from low-income backgrounds and English learners. First time that we've had that in Delaware. My last budget was $63 million statewide. We created the Wilmington Learning Collaborative to create a kind of a district within the three districts. The city was split up to desegregate the schools that were legally segregated prior to the 1960s. And we've never really recovered from that. So I would like to see, we'd like to, and all the legislature has agreed to move Christina District out of the city, to have two districts, Brandywine and Red Clay, as the managing the schools in the city. We also provide additional resources for early childhood education. We need to get our kids early. We got to make sure that they get particularly skills that lead to literacy proficiency. We need to really focus on after school and summer programming, which is I hope to be able to do it as mayor. That's where we're going to focus. We're going to try to use our parks as an extra academic setting for our children. After I finished coaching at Penn years ago, I guess when I was doing it, I coached at a reading basketball camp up in Germantown. And, you know, we got the kids to come into the camp for the basketball, and then we snuck some reading on them. And that's what I'd like to do with the parks, you know, get our kids into the parks. And I want to create a reading contest. But if you can't read proficiently at third grade, you're going to have trouble all the way through.
Hi there. I'm Brad Sanders. I'm a special ed math teacher just recently in Philadelphia, and I moved to Wilmington about a month and a half ago. I am kind of worried about the situation at where in Hedgeville. And I think in particular about the drug problem. What are you going to do about the future of Wilmington to make sure that the people there get enough resources to kind of surmount their position, to give them kind of rehab? I've heard a bit about some pushback about homeless shelters, but I'm really interested mostly in the drug problem in that small segment of the city.
It's comprehensive and complicated, right? We have to have a law enforcement approach to the people who are selling drugs to those individuals. You're not going to... One of the things I've learned is, years ago, we went after... There was on Route 9, there was prostitution constantly. And so we would ramp up our law enforcement effort, and then we'd damp it down over here, and then it'd pop up over there. And we have a similar problem with the kind of drug dealing that you're talking about. So I talked to the chief about it last week as we were touring one of these areas. And he said to me, I said, why don't we go out? You can see these people dealing drugs. Why don't we arrest these people or put the cameras out or whatever? He said, you got to get the head. If you don't get the head of the snake, these folks are just going to continue to come back out and infiltrate this neighborhood. The point is, you got to do it both. Like, you can't just go after the head. You got, because these other guys are ruining your neighborhood in the meantime. And so you've got to have neighborhood stabilization, you've got to have investment in your communities, and you've got to have a law enforcement approach that comes in.
Hi, my name is Anna Viles. Thank you, Mayor Carney. I'm so glad you talked about housing. It was a perfect segue. You shared that it's important to grow the city and to support workers, but so many people are struggling to afford housing because the rent is so high. And even though they are building more units, and that's important, people can't afford because many of the new units that have come in are luxury. I know that Wilmington City Council introduced a rent stabilization law that would put limits on how high rents can be raised. Do you plan to support or veto the bill? And if so, what are your plans to directly help renters in the city, specifically in the short term?
Yeah, I've said publicly I don't support it because it doesn't work. And I challenge the people who think that it does to show me a city, and we'll go talk to the folks and see how they do it and how they make it work. Where I sit, the investments that we made, I talked about the fund balance that we have. Perfect use of that fund balance is that land bank program that limits vacant, promotes affordable home ownership on blocks and neighborhoods across our city. To me, that's the best use of public taxpayer dollars. We should also encourage market rate apartment building and townhouse building and all of that, because we need the tax base so that we can invest in the subsidized housing that we need in the city. You have to do it at every level. If rent control worked anywhere, it might be worth, but what happens with rent control, nobody invests. Nobody invests, market rate or non-market rate. That's a death knell for a city. So it's an issue where I understand the attractiveness of it to members of council, particularly who have constituents like we all do that are paying this rents. But I'd rather work on comprehensively more units, affordable and market rate, additional training for workforce so people can have the jobs that right now we're going to $15 minimum wage. That's $31,500 plus non-cash benefits. You're up to $50,000, and all of a sudden you can afford the rent on a market based rent here in our city. So the answer is, you've got to do it all, and that's what makes it so hard.
And that was the recording from the live event we hosted last week in Wilmington with John Carney. Thanks to the mayor for his time, and thanks to the wonderful staff of Theater Inn, and thanks to all the Studio 2 listeners who came to see us in person. It was great to see new faces and some regulars. So we got some great comments this hour, and I'm going to read a few. We have John who commented on Facebook, with President Biden leaving office, there is now a big push to invest in Wilmington at the level needed to generate a transformation. How can Delaware create a new major economy to supplement or supplant the chemical companies, he asked. We got an email from Ashley who says, the most important issue facing Wilmington right now is the fact that the largely Democratic city council does not seem to care about its low-income residents. They also rely on fines and fees such as red light cameras and penalties on water bills, which unfairly burden low-income residents. We also have a message from Chris Murray, a Wilmington resident, who says they do a poor job of marketing the good parts of Wilmington. So we get to now reveal the DJ of the day for this week, and there are multiple winners. Peter, Paul, and Mark all suggested the song I'm From Delaware by Todd Chappelle. It is a fun spoof on the Johnny Cash song I'm From Everywhere. By the way, Todd is a friend of WHYY who was featured in our series Delaware. Let's take a listen.
I'm from Delaware, man. I'm from Delaware. Traffic's bad out there, man. Construction everywhere.
Pretty catchy there. Well, Studio 2 is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Murray-Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer, Diana Martinez and Paul Parmalee were our studio engineers today. Charlie Kyer was our live engineer. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Our general manager is Joan Isabella. For Avi Wolfman-Arendt from Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg. Thanks so much for listening today.
Harrington State Fair, man, I'm from Delaware.